So I'll be talking about twisted bilayer graphene, charge neutrality with interactions and disorder. But before I get that, I'll start with a bit of motivation about why I think the system is worth studying. Okay, and so if we just start sort of at the very beginning of all condensed matter physics, it turns out that treating the electrons in a solid as free particles is actually remarkably successful. So we just determined the single particle energies of some electron on my 1D lattice here. We get a set of energies as a function of the momentum, which I have plotted here. And then since we're assuming they're free, the many electrons in the solid just occupy these single particle eigenstates. Because of Fermi statistics, we can't have them, can't be more than one electron in a state at a time. And so we just fill them up from the bottom up until the Fermi energy. And so this band theory is actually, you know, still continues to give new physics, you know, more recently in topological insulators. But we can, we should ask, when is such an approximation valid? Well, if we just look at the energy scales, we have the bandwidth essentially quantifies the kinetic energy. And roughly speaking, if that's much larger than your interaction scale, then this approximation is probably not so bad. However, thankfully, from a condensed matter perspective, not all physics is described by band theory, and interactions are important. And they can result in a sort of vast array of different phases. And so now I'll just briefly outline some of the phenomena that frequently arises in my research. And so one common, very common consequence of interactions is symmetry breaking. So superconductivity, magnetism, you could have a breaking of a rotational symmetry giving an emmetic phase. And here I'm just showing your canonical example of the icing model, which has no preferred spin direction, yet the ground state selects, you know, either I'll spin up or I'll spin down. There are more exotic possibilities as well. So even though we know that that electrons are what compose the solid, they may not necessarily constitute the fundamental degrees of freedom of the system. Instead, they can be broken apart or fractionalized. So this is what happens in spin liquids or in a fractional quantum Hall state, which I've illustrated here, where, you know, the electron in the system is separated into three parts, each of charge 1/3. Another outcome is that, you know, there could be no sense of quasiparticle, fractionalized or not. So in a critical system such as a phase transition, this is what happens. Similarly, you can also actually have critical phases of matter at zero temperature. And so here's just a snapshot of what you would get on the icing model. There's no length scale here. And so if we're at zero temperature, this implies in some vague sense some long range entanglement. And now all of these systems I've, you know, so far been discussing, we really, much easier to talk about them with perfect translation symmetry. Of course, we know that in reality, that's not how the world works. There's always some defects or disorder. So here I'm just showing some vacancies that are randomly distributed in my little icing model. Shouldn't be too surprising that disorder can really substantially alter the physics of what you're seeing. And this can actually have some particularly subtle effects when combined with the interaction physics. And I'll get back to this later in the talk. And so while you know, our theoretical understanding of some of these phases remains incomplete, as particularly these exotic ones, I think it's also important to understand where such phases could arise. And so today, I'm not actually going to be discussing the theoretical description of these phases, but rather I'm going to be focusing on a system where for, you know, you could hope that some of these more interesting exotic phases could be realized. Moreover, disorder in this system, twisted bilayer graphene, has some pretty interesting characteristics. And so, it's the first time I was able to use one of these transitions, so pretty excited. So twisted bilayer graphene, what is it? You take two monolayers of graphene, so that's a honeycomb lattice of carbon atoms. You stack them atop one another, but offset by some twist angle. So that breaks the microscopic translation symmetry of your lattice, but gives you this moiré or superlattice translation symmetry. In particular, I'm going to be focusing on small twist angles, for which the fact that you don't actually have a true translation symmetry doesn't really matter. So, you know, when AM here is very, very large, the fact that this isn't actually commensurate can be neglected. And actually, in this limit, this moiré lattice constant is inversely proportional to the twist angle itself. So it's not surprising that, or it shouldn't be too surprising again, that this type of stacking and twisting procedure dramatically changes the properties of the material. So just like in a solid, we have a translation symmetry, and so we have a corresponding set of conserved momentum, so a Brillouin zone. And if we assume that this free electron picture is valid, then we can write down a band theory, or we can calculate a band structure, which is what I've done here for 1.5 degrees, a twist angle of 1.5 degrees. Now, as we vary this twist angle down to 1.1, 1.05 degrees, we see that the bands closest to charge neutrality become nearly completely flat. And so this is what defines the magic angle. I've here zoomed in on it. And well, you know, my starting assumption to make this band theory was that I could ignore interactions. But now I'm telling you that the kinetic energy is vanishing, and so maybe that wasn't such a great approximation. And sure enough, if we plug in the numbers, the bandwidth, so the kinetic energy, is around 5 MeV or less even. Whereas if you just do a rough estimate of your Coulomb interaction strength, just plugging in the moiré lattice constant as your length scale, you find that it's around 3 times larger. And so this is really the ideal, playground for the type of interaction physics I presented earlier. And so sure enough, you do see correlation physics. So I guess just over 2 years ago now, Pablo Jaureo Herrero's group at MIT constructed twisted bilayer graphene and measured the conductance as a function of carrier density. So the horizontal axis is the carrier density, so changing the Fermi energy, how many electrons are in the system. The vertical axis is showing the conductance. And most importantly, when you tune the Fermi energy to lie within the flat bands, partially filled, here on the whole dope side, they observed superconductivity. So that's this plateauing of the conductance. And so here is a sort of zoom in of this. You have the carrier density versus temperature, and the dark blue regions are where the resistance is zero. So we have these superconducting domes with some, you know, looks like some intervening correlated insulating state. And so twisted bilayer graphene really distinguishes itself in a number of ways. It's a highly tunable system. So not only could they vary the doping in and out of this superconducting phases, but the twist angle itself also acts as another tuning parameter by which you can vary the effect of interactions. Moreover, since twisted bilayer graphene was sort of first constructed, a number of cousin systems have also been made, which also display correlation physics. So here's an example of twisted double bilayer graphene, where instead of stacking monolayers offset by some twist angle, you stack two Bernal stacked bilayers. So you have four total sheets of graphene. Altogether, twisted bilayer graphene and its family of systems, they display a pretty diverse phenomenology. I mentioned superconductivity, but there are these correlated insulating states whose nature, I would say, is not really understood. Ferromagnetism, as well as a quantum anomalous Hall effect, have also been observed. I think trying to understand what's happening in these systems is interesting in its own right, but you could also ask whether or not there are connections to other longstanding problems in physics. So this is this phase diagram I showed out of the MIT group's paper, and here is a cartoon of the cuprate phase diagram. And they look pretty similar, and so you could ask maybe they have similar physics is what gives rise to them. And finally, you know, looking further to the future, given the diversity of the phenomenology, you know, paired with their high degree of tunability, you could hope that these twisted bilayer systems may allow for the construction of some interesting devices. Most notably, many of the ingredients that are exploited in devices for fault-tolerant quantum computation are already found here intrinsically within this one system. And so today I'm going to be arguing that the correlated physics of twisted bilayer graphene is even more prevalent than may have previously been appreciated. And so looking back at this plot out of the MIT group's paper, we see at charge neutrality that they see a semi-metallic conductance minimum. And this is in agreement with the free electron band structure. And so you might conclude that, well, correlations don't really matter here. However, this is a figure out of a different group, Dmitry Efetov's group in Barcelona. It's essentially plotting the same thing. It's carrier density on the horizontal axis, but instead of conductance, they're plotting the resistance. Instead of a semi-metallic behavior at charge neutrality, they observe insulating behavior, which they believe to be of a correlated nature. And so I'll show how this free-seeming behavior up here could be explained by an interplay of correlations, physics, and disorder. And so my talk is going to have two parts. First, I'll argue that correlations are really present in the physics at charge neutrality. And then I'll sort of add disorder into the mix and reconcile these transport measurements. So my argument for the first part of the talk is largely based off STM data. Through an analogy with quantum Hall physics, I'll present some self-consistent mean field solutions that are capable of capturing the qualitative features of the data. This will lead to an identification of a set of low-lying candidate states. And then with an eye to the sort of next part of my talk, I'll identify one of these states, which also preserves time reversal as well as the spin symmetry. So this work is based on a collaboration with Stevan Nagy-Perge's group at Caltech, as well as various theorists as well. So STM is a local probe of the system, scanning tunneling microscopy. Here's a little cartoon of it. We have the sample, and then they have the tip, which locally, one of the things it can measure is the density of states. And this is what is shown here. Large density of states is shown in red, whereas a small density of states is blue. The horizontal axis is shooting the bat gate, so that's how many electrons are present in the system at a time, whereas the, right, that was the vertical axis. The horizontal axis is changes, is giving you the density of states at a distance, V bias, from the Fermi energy, which is two, which is fixed always here at zero. So if we go back to our free electron picture, I have this band structure. Integrating overall momentum at constant energy, we get a density of states, which looks like this. The flat bands have these very sharp, these very large von Hove peaks, because of course there are many, many states in a very narrow energy window. And so if we then look at what's happening in this green region, what is essentially being plotted along this blue line is the same as this density of states. We can see these two von Hove peaks. We can't see anything here that would correspond to this density of states, simply because it's much smaller. And so all of these orange arrows sort of correspond to the same energy, so the distance from the Fermi energy to that first von Hove peak. As we empty this upper dispersive band right here, that arrow approaches the Fermi energy. And importantly, in this region, the von Hove peak splitting remains constant, which is at least an indication that this free electron band structure picture, it's not obviously invalid. In fact, it is very likely to explain what is happening in this region, just because we wouldn't expect there to be any appreciable difference as we vary the Fermi energy very far away from these flat bands. As we move into this gray region here, which is where the Fermi energy now lies somewhere in the flat bands, the situation is quite different. So here you can see that as we continue emptying the flat bands, the von Hove peak splitting increases. And so this is not in agreement with the free electron picture. Clearly there's something else that has to be happening. And so we can then, by analogy, what is sort of the simplest situation where such a similar thing arises? So I'm going to now shift gears a little and talk very briefly about quantum Hall physics. When you apply a magnetic field, the coupling of the electrons to the orbital degrees of freedom results in Landau levels. But even if you have the same Landau level, there'll be some splitting as a result of the Zeeman effect, so just a Zeeman splitting here. And that's without any sort of interaction, which is to say these Landau levels are completely empty. And you find that when you start filling one of the Landau levels, that the difference between them increases. So it's no longer just this Zeeman energy. And this is a result of interactions, which we can understand quite reasonably intuitively. So if we first consider adding another down electron, so that's the lower Landau level, by Fermi statistics, we know that it can't be at the same location as any of the other down electrons that are present. And so this minimizes the Coulomb energy. By contrast, there's no such restriction on the location of an up electron, and so it costs more to add such an up electron. This can be formulated quite simply in mean field theory, where we have this exchange energy that's just proportional to the difference in the filling. So we can plot this in the same way I did the density of states, where here I'm varying the filling and here is the energy. When we have zero filling, I have that Zeeman splitting, which is small. But as I continue filling my lower Landau level, the energy difference is increasing. There's a discontinuity here once I've completely filled that lower Landau level, and that's just because of the gap, because I've fixed my I fixed the chemical potential to lie always within these Landau levels. But of course, as a result of this discontinuity, you might be concerned that this doesn't look so similar to the figure on the right. But in any sort of real system, there'll be some sort of disorder or background density of states, which would result in a smearing of it, a smearing of that profile, giving you something that looks maybe more like this. And so that's pretty much the main idea, that perhaps this splitting at charge neutrality is just the result of an exchange energy. But in order to make sure that makes any sense, we actually have to look at the details of the model. And so I'll just overview now some of the symmetries about twisted bilayer graphene. And this will be important because, for every symmetry, we have another opportunity for symmetry breaking, which is a different state. So to start, the low energy degrees of freedom of the graphene monolayers are simply the Dirac cones. So this is my graphene spectrum. This baryon zone is the large baryon zone corresponding to the microscopic translation symmetry of the lattice. When we have the two stacked atop one another, offset by that twist angle, this results, if we just sort of zoom in on one of these K points, results in these two Dirac cones with their small splitting, like so. Now, if we want to turn on tunneling, so allow the states of the two layers to hybridize, well, the first thing to note is that because the moiré lattice itself is so very large, the electrons within each layer locally essentially see a constant stacking. And that means that locally, the type of tunneling that the electrons see is almost constant. It's not quite constant. There's still some momentum transfer, but it's very small. And what's important then is that if you have a state that originates proximate to the K valley, it's not going to mix with the states proximate to the K prime valley to a very high degree of accuracy. And so this can be formulated as a U1 valley symmetry, which really just means that we can treat K and K prime as flavor indices analogous to spin. In addition to this emergent valley symmetry, there's some other symmetries to note. We have time reversal, which here I'm not including the spin flip. There's also the spin rotation symmetry as well. Then we have a C2 180 degree rotation symmetry, as well as a C3 symmetry. Now, notably, both time reversal and C2 take K to minus K, so that's the graphene monolayers. So that doesn't preserve the U1 valley symmetry. So if I want to talk about what's happening in a band with definite spin and valley flavor, this is neither T nor C2 are good symmetries. Nevertheless, their composition is, so C2T is preserved. And this is actually quite good because it's what protects the Dirac cones. So if we didn't have this C2T symmetry, the Dirac cones would generate a mass. They would be massive, and you would get a gap at charge neutrality just based, you know, off your band physics. So here I'm showing this gap. And so that's mostly what we need to know to do our mean field theory. And so we, you know, implemented essentially the simplest possible model we could find, which was the 10-band model proposed by Semple and Ashwin Vishwanath's group and Liu Jun. I think he was in this paper. So that includes actually all of these bands here. We considered an on-site Hubbard interaction. And we specified to a single flavor. So we only did these calculations for one spin and one valley. And with this model, we determined some self-consistent mean field solutions. So here, you know, is my original Hamiltonian. And what we find is some quadratic Hamiltonian that as an approximation. So this term HMF here, it depends on nu, which is the filling, so how many electrons are in the system. So the band structure will change as we change the filling, which is, you know, exactly what I wanted. But it will also depend quite crucially on whether or not I allow symmetries to break. So we can first ask, what if I don't allow symmetries to break at all? We can self-consistently calculate that HMF term. And the resulting spectrum we find gives us something that looks like this. So here, this is kind of my analog. Here, my band is completely filled. Here's it's completely empty. And I'm measuring the density of states from zero, which is the Fermi energy, which is pinned in the center. And quite noticeably, it doesn't do the job I wanted. The von Hovpeek splitting is constant, regardless of the filling. In fact, this symmetry-preserving solution looks very nearly identical to what you get without, you know, doing considering interactions at all. And so, you know, barring any more exotic physics, you would say that it's likely then that you need some sort of symmetry breaking in order to explain what is being seen in STM. And sure enough, if we actually allow symmetries to break and calculate the lowest energies, what we find is in agreement with that. So here what I'm plotting is the ground state energy difference. So this is the ground state, the difference of the ground state energy between a symmetry broken solution and that solution that I just presented, the one that doesn't break any of the symmetries. We can see that all of these lines are less than zero, close to charge neutrality, NF equals zero here. But the lowest energy state is this red line, and that's the solution that breaks the C2T symmetry. And so by breaking the C2T symmetry, that means that the Dirac cones have acquired a mass spontaneously, and this is then an insulator at charge neutrality. And that is, of course, why my figure here has this jagged appearance, which again doesn't look so similar to that experimental data that I had. However, again, once we, you know, remember that nothing this sharp can actually exist, or nothing this sharp should be expected to be observed, and you smear it out, you can maybe get what is being seen. More concretely, here is a figure out of Ali Yazdani's group. They also did STM. And at least in this sample, they do observe this green region, what appears to be quite a hard gap. The other groups, what they see is consistent with a hard gap, although you could, to be fair, argue for semi-metallic behavior. It's quite actually difficult to make any precise statements, although I won't although it's certainly consistent with a gap.
So this is a Valley Hall state, or?
This state?
Yeah.
So this state here, well, I'll get to this shortly, but this state here is only has one band, so yeah. But right, as I think Chong preempted, the state itself only has one band so far, flavor. So there's only one spin, one valley so far. But if you look at the band structure, it has non-trivial churn number. So that's a topological invariant, which is related to the properties of the wave function. And what's important is that it can't change, so the churn number here can't change without causing a gap to close. So here, if we have our system where the filled band, the lower band at charge neutrality, has churn number equals -1, then at the boundary between it and the vacuum, which has a trivial churn number 0, we have some edge mode. Acting C2T on this state, well, that flips the sign of the Dirac mass, which then flips the churn number of the filled band, as well as the direction of the modes along the edge. So in this state, these churn bands are really like a Landau level in some sense. Now, so far, everything I've been saying is for a single flavor. When you add different flavors, there's a number of different scenarios that can arise. So first of all, we could assume that each of my four flavors, for k, k prime, up and down spin, they could each open up such a mass. But even in that case, there's different ways of assigning these churn numbers to the different flavors. So right here, I have one example. That's what I'm going to be calling a quantum Valley Hall state. This state, and in this state, the both spins of a single valley have the same churn number, but the spins of the other valley have the opposite churn number. And so, each of these sectors, these spin valley sectors, breaks the C2T symmetry. This state, in total, actually preserves time reversal as well as the spin symmetry. It does, however, break the C2, the 180 degree rotation symmetry. So that means acting C2, we get this other state, and it's degenerate. If this is the state that the system realizes, then it should spontaneously choose one of these two. There are, of course, other options. For instance, here I have a quantum Hall, or perhaps a quantum anomalous Hall state, where all of the spin valley sectors have the same churn number. So this state preserves the C2 symmetry, but breaks time reversal. There are also options where you also break the spin symmetry. But as far as the mean field theory goes, at least at the very rough level I've ever dealt with, all of these states have the same energy. So I can't really distinguish them. There are, however, additional options to these states. So here I'm showing a plot out of Mike Zalatel and Ashwin-Vishwanath's group, where they considered a mean field theory using other with multiple flavors. So the vertical axis of this plot is showing the ground state energy, and the horizontal axis is some parameter they use to control how much strain there is. But just assuming that we have no strain, looking in the middle, this purple line corresponds to that set of C2T breaking insulators I just discussed. And we can see that it's nearly degenerate with this yellow line, which corresponds to polarized states. So that's a phase where all of the spin up, say, bands are occupied and all the spin down bands are empty. Their lowest energy state that they find is actually something they called a Cramer's intervalley coherence state. This state, despite its name, actually breaks time reversal, as well as the U1 valley symmetry. So it has, you know, at a mean field level, it has some hopping between states originating in different valleys. Okay, so this is the end of my first part of my talk, just to summarize. It does look like we need symmetry breaking. And if not, well, maybe there's something very interesting happening. But otherwise, there's a lot of states that are reasonably close in energy. But what's going to be important is that among all of those states that I listed, only the quantum valley Hall order preserves both time reversal and the spin symmetry.
When you say that, is there evidence saying these two symmetries are not broken?
Time reversal?
Time reversal and SU2.
Well, what I want to talk about is disorder, and I don't mean you don't expect to have magnetic disorder in your graphene. But yeah. Yeah, so that's this point here, yes. Spontaneously, you could break these symmetries, but I mostly want to be talking about some weak breaking that is extrinsic. Right. And so now I want to discuss, add disorder into the mix. This will lead me to the development of an icing model through which I'll obtain a Chalker-Coddington network model, which will realize a semi-metallic behavior reminiscent of Dirac fermions. And then I'll finish by discussing some potential experimental verification. And this is work done in collaboration with Jason Alisea, whose name vanished and can be found here. So let's just revisit my discrepancy. At the top here now, I have a plot out of the UCSB Columbia group. They also observe a semi-metallic behavior at charge neutrality. So here they're plotting the resistance as a function of carrier density, and this narrow peak is semi-metallic. Whereas down here, I again have ICFO, the Barcelona group's data, where they see this insulating state at charge neutrality. Moreover, at least at the time, Efetov's groups, this lower group's samples were known to be ultra clean. They're less disorder than the other systems. Now, one resolution to the discrepancy you might imagine, given the cleanness situation, is the following. So when I say one form of disorder that is present is twist angle disorder. And so you could imagine, which is to say that different regions of the samples up here are at different twist angles, which means that perhaps different regions of the sample up here have a large bandwidth such that they can't realize, the correlation physics aren't strong enough to realize whatever sort of insulating phase is seen by Dmitry Efetov's group. So whereas his sample has a uniform twist angle, and so you can see this insulator. However, if we remember everything I just said, that doesn't seem to be the case. Locally, all of the STM groups really do see the indication of correlation physics at charge neutrality.
So are these on ultra clean sample or on just dirty samples?
These samples are like actually quite a bit dirtier because, these samples are encapsulated in boron nitride, whereas to do tunneling, you can't have the top layer. Yeah. I should have maybe said, it's not just actually the Caltech group that sees this type of behavior. There's many other STM groups that see very similar pictures.
Right. But then why do you think it's not the boron nitride substrate that, you know, distinguishes these?
That what?
Like, you said that the other difference with the FDOF group is that they encapsulate boron nitride.
No, no, both of these groups are encapsulated in boron nitride.
Okay.
It's this one here actually has boron nitride on the bottom.
Okay.
And then the top is sort of free to the air. And so here I'm going to, so we instead have the following solution, which I'll briefly outline before going into more details. So first we assume that correlations dominate, or are important, and that this selects out a set of low-lying states with similar energies. Those are the ones that I mentioned. For the moment, I'll assume that it is actually the quantum valley Hall state that is the clean ground state, although I'll get back later to a scenario to explaining why I don't actually need it to be the unique ground state. And what's special about this state is that it's the unique state to preserve both time reversal and spin, but that it spontaneously breaks the C280 degree rotation symmetry. I next consider the effect of weak smooth disorder that preserves those symmetries, that time reversal and the spin symmetry. This is a natural assumption for disorder in graphene. However, of course, disorder is going to break the spatial symmetry, and so it can couple directly with the quantum valley Hall order. And so if you have a less homogeneous sample, well, you'll expect to see many different domains of quantum valley Hall order. So, you know, there's two degenerate ground states, and that's what each of these colors are representing. As I'll explain, the boundaries between these domains bind edge modes, which in turn can mediate the semi-metallic conduction as observed by the MIT and UCSB Columbia groups. In contrast, if you have a very clean sample, well, you might just see a single domain, and this in turn will be an insulating state, as I'll explain. Right. So here's my quantum valley Hall state again. You have these churn numbers, and there's two degenerate possibilities, which are related by the C2 symmetry. We can parameterize the spontaneous symmetry breaking through an icing order parameter. Moreover, I'm going to, it's appropriate to consider a classical icing model because I want to be looking in the region where far away from the transition, implying that, you know, correlations really want to be in this quantum valley Hall state. I'll mention that I can actually relate the parameters of this model, of this icing model, back to the microscopic parameters of the theory, but I won't get into details. We can ask what happens at a domain wall boundary. Well, if we just focus on the plus K valley sector, at a domain wall, the churn number changes here from -1 to +1, so it changes by 2. Meaning that this domain wall binds 2 edge modes in the plus K valley sector per spin. In the other sector, the churn number also changes by 2, but it does so in the opposite direction. And so these edge modes are counterpropagating relative to those of the other valley. You might then worry, naturally, that if I have two sets of edge modes that are physically occupying the same region of space, that they'll backscatter and cause and open a gap. However, provided this domain boundary is smooth enough, it changes slowly enough, that valley symmetry should be conserved still. And so we won't get backscattering in that limit. So we can now include disorder particular weak smooth disorder. And because I've reduced my problem at this point to one of spontaneous symmetry breaking or spontaneous symmetry breaking of the C2, we only need to consider disorder that directly couples to the field phi. So in terms of the original fermionic model, it's really some disorder potential M here, which couples to some Dirac mass. C2 is still conserved on average, and so this thing M has expectation value 0, so it averages to 0. It is, however, I assume, Gaussian correlated. And so now I can actually tell you what I mean by weak and smooth. So by smooth, I just mean that the correlation length of my disorder is much, much larger than the microscopic lattice constant of the graphene monolayers. This is important in order to ensure that that valley symmetry is still preserved. And by weak, I just mean that the correlations are still sort of the dominant energy scale. So that's U. And so this little delta M here is much smaller. Translating this into the language of my icing model again, we see that the disorder acts as a random field. So it's a magnetic field. It breaks the Z2 symmetry. Giving us something like this. And so what I've done is essentially argued that this twisted bilayer graphene system at charge neutrality with correlations and disorder can be described through a random field icing model. And now the random field icing model in two dimensions, classical, is known to not to possess any long-range order, regardless of how strong or weak, rather, the random field is in the thermodynamic limit. And so you'll get some sort of domains. Now there's two parameter regimes for the size of these domains. In one limit, you have sort of ultra-smooth disorder. In this limit, really, the field phi just tracks the disorder itself, and so your typical domain size is given by the correlation length of the disorder. What's important even about this limit is that even though your field phi is tracking the disorder, it's still not giving you the gap. So here I'm showing this is your the random field, and it has a very small amplitude, little delta m. But your mass term, the Dirac mass, which is really the gap of your field, that's still set by some correlation physics. In the other limit, that's where actually interactions are much, much stronger. In that case, the field kind of forgets that the disorder itself is correlated at all, and you wind up with exponentially large domains. And so now, that was all. We don't have any long-range order in a thermodynamic limit, but that's not what a sample is. A sample is finite size. So we can consider different limits. In the first case, we can imagine that we have our sample is smaller than the typical domain size. And so our sample, in this case, will realize then a single domain. You may be concerned that that we'll have these edge modes. However, those edge modes were protected in the bulk by the smoothness of any potential. Any disorder, which is certainly not the case at the physical sample boundary, which is very sharp. And so the edges in that case will backscatter, resulting in an insulating behavior, as perhaps seen by the Efetov group. In contrast, if your system is much larger than the typical domain size, so maybe your domains are small because you have more disorder, you will realize a network model like shown here. In fact, you'll have 8 Chalker-Coddington network models if you count them up. And this can be directly mapped back on to a set of 8 Dirac cones, thus explaining the semi-metallic transport seen by the UCSB Columbia as well as the MIT groups.
So for this, should you assume that the sample size is smaller than the localization length or something? Do you worry about localization in this case?
Yeah, I mean, it will ultimately localize, but the samples aren't that big, because I'm talking about domains that contain multiple moiré unit cells, which are already very massive. But yeah. And I mean, things are pretty ballistic in graphene, so. Right. So now, this whole story, I said, seems to be, you know, predicated on the fact that this quantum Valley Hall order was the true ground state of my clean Hamiltonian. But I, you know, told you that that's not necessarily the case. And so what is important is, again, the fact that it preserves these symmetries, time reversal and the spin. And as a result, it's the only ground state that can gain energy by locally aligning with the random field. And we can try to understand this the simplest possible way by considering some competing phase, again, with an Ising order parameter. We assume that they have largely identical parameters, except for the ground state energy, which is, I'm going to say, is delta epsilon within some patch of some, you know, arbitrary size. And using some Imrie-Mah type arguments, as well as, you know, checking some very simple mean field theories, you can derive a phase diagram that looks like this. So if we look here, in this region where the vertical axis delta epsilon over delta m is negative, that's actually back to the description I first gave you, where the quantum Valley Hall order was the true ground state in the clean limit. We then have these two limits, I said, where we have strong interactions and exponentially large domains, and the other limit where we have sort of a smooth disorder and the field phi just follows the disorder. Now, letting delta epsilon over delta m be positive, we see that there's a crossover to a state in which the competing phase is realized throughout most of the sample. I think actually in my very simplistic model, this would be a percolation transition, but I don't know that you should take my model seriously enough to believe that. But what I think is sort of, you know, what is intuitive here is that it's the smooth disorder limit where you're more likely to still realize this quantum Valley Hall phase despite it not being the ground state in the clean limit. And that's just because in the limit where, you know, phi is allowed to locally track the disorder, that's sort of where it can maximize the energy gain that disorder gives it. And so we see, importantly, that even though we may have otherwise the same set of parameters describing these two systems, disorder may actually select which phase is actually being realized. And so, you know, I said that it was, the Efetov's group, that's the group that saw the insulator at charge neutrality. I said that that was a quantum Valley Hall state. But here I'm saying, actually, it need not be quantum Valley Hall state. They could be sort of over here in what they're seeing, whereas the other groups, the MIT groups and MIT and UCSB Columbia groups, their semi-metallic behavior might be because they're over here. So how could we test my proposal? Well, you could imagine if you could perhaps see such a domain wall boundary directly through STM. And that would be sort of the ideal case. However, there are some complications with STM just in general, and so it would be very nice to be able to see something similar through transport. And so here's one way in which you could envision seeing one signature of what I'm describing. So you can imagine taking your sample and etching it into strips of different width W. If your width is much larger than your typical domain size, then you'll realize this this network model and semi-metallic and see semi-metallic transport. But as soon as your width becomes smaller than the typical domain size, it will appear insulating. Now, you might be concerned because of twist angle disorder. Maybe you cut your sample up, which you probably don't want to do anyways. That maybe they're just sort of different phases being realized because the twist angle is different. And so you could imagine a much more sophisticated version where you have some sort of variable set of back gates in which you can tune the width of this opening through some without sort of destroying the sample. And so to summarize, I've argued that we can display this discrepancy through this interplay of disorder and interactions. Strangely enough, as you increase disorder, it seems like you get better conductance. There are some future directions. For instance, are there implications for this type of argument at other fillings or for other moiré heterostructures? In particular, why is it that the insulators at partial filling, in particular at nu equals 2, seem to be much more robust than whatever is happening at charge neutrality? Why is this the case? You would expect, at least from mean field theory, that the gap charge neutrality is larger. Can ask, what is the behavior of such a network model under the application of a magnetic field? People measure the Landau level spectrum, and is such a network model in agreement with what they see? And while I've argued for interactions, I have completely ignored how they are affecting the edge modes themselves. And so you could take that in consideration.
Questions? Is the density of space from STM consistent with the disorder scenario?
Well, yeah, because locally they see what looks like a gap. And then I think it's kind of hard to know to see edge modes easily because STM forms bound states at the tip. So,
and experimentally, is there any evidence for the symmetric breaking for this insulating state?
For the pneumatic state, the C2 breaking. This is actually, Eva Andre's group, they were sort of able to map out what they said the sort of electron-like and hole-like regions within a unit cell were. And actually, unfortunately, what they see is not in agreement. It's not in disagreement, but it doesn't show obvious C2 symmetry breaking. It does show C3 symmetry breaking, but not obvious C2 symmetry breaking. So it could be that they're looking at some region that's different than this, than the phase I'm discussing, But that's the only sort of direct probe I know of the symmetry, and yeah, it doesn't quite agree.
So is the quantum value Hall state the only state, the only insulating state that doesn't have the protected edge state? Because the other two you mentioned, quantum spin and quantum hole, they have edge state.
Okay, so yeah, there's a quantum, there's I think four. You have a quantum Hall,
right.
And then you have a quantum spin Hall. And those do not depend on the the valley symmetry. Then you would have a quantum spin valley Hall. The quantum spin valley Hall, if you break the valley symmetry, will also. Those states will also. You're also breaking a continuous symmetry, so there's a bit more happening in the spin state.
So has any group been doing VR experiments, the proposed ones?
I think it's really, no, not that I'm aware of. I think it's hard. Well, there might be other reasons to have a similar setup, but not yet. I think there's, yeah, we can eventually.
OK, Alex is here until I think late Wednesday afternoon. I still have a couple open slots. If you'd like to meet here, just be in contact with me. Let's thank her again for the talk.